Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, November 11th. Welcome to the program. My name is Magnus Thiewald.
I'm Peter R.H.
And we've got a bunch of stuff lined up for you today. Fun drive is over. If you've been listening to the station at all this week, you've heard us talk extensively about Fun Drive. And thank you so much to the many, many folks who donated to Fun Drive and helped us get close to our goal. Even though Fun Drive is over, it's not too late to make a donation. If you've been thinking about it, you can still do it. The online donation page is still open at cjsf.ca/donate, and we'd love to have you do that. But once again, thank you to everyone who donated, and thank you to all the programmers for all their hard work during this week, during their programs at events surrounding Fun Drive. And the effort put in by everyone, staff, volunteers, and you, our listeners. So thank you so much for that. It's an important part of our year, and we really appreciate your support. We also really appreciate you listening to the station, and we that's something you do throughout the year, and we're really happy you're here. Kind of gives the point to what we're doing on this side of the microphone. So thank you for that. We have a bunch of stuff lined up for you today. It's a Remembrance Day tomorrow, so we have a report related to that coming up in just a few minutes. We also have an extended interview from our reporter Danny Nesvadarani with Vision Zero, which is a group here in Vancouver which seeks to drive road deaths for passengers or pedestrians and car passengers all the way down to zero if possible. And so they're taking efforts in various communities to across a broad spectrum of issues, everything from driving behavior to the planning to the sort of formulation of interviews and other problem spots around Vancouver. So we're going to hear about that. We have our last episode, regular episode for the season of Gardening with Embark with Pablo Venus. Pablo and Venus and I will be talking about that basically the 2024 gardening season is over. We're going to talk about thinking ahead towards the 2025 season and when you need to start doing things.
2026 season.
Thank you. The 2026 season. And what you need to do to plan ahead to get your plants in the ground at the right time and have another fabulous bounty next year. Peter, what are you bringing to us today?
Well, I'm going to be following up with what I did last week. I mentioned that Canada and the Philippines signed a status of visiting forces agreement, and I'm reading from the Government of Canada page. That was last week. Have you heard anything in the news about this? Because I just heard it briefly, not last Sunday, the Sunday before that on CBC Radio, very briefly about this. Have you heard anything about this?
No.
So I'm going to go over this. It's brief what it says here, but also I'm going to go over a Vice News article from 2020 about Canadian mining firms in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So I'll be condensing that a little bit.
Great. All right. So we are tomorrow is Remembrance Day, November 11th. There will be remembrance ceremonies throughout the region. The central one, which will be at Victory Square in downtown Vancouver at Hastings and Cambie. But there will be there are cenotaphs, and there will be some ceremonies in almost every community throughout the Greater Vancouver region. Of course, the impact of World War One, which was the which in the aftermath of that was the origin of Remembrance Day, because of the horrific scale of death of and the of soldiers in the Canadian military. And of course, in Europe as well, but it impacted every community with the loss of young men in war, and I think that really shocked people. So there will be some ceremonies throughout the region. One in Vancouver, Victory Square, kicks off at about 20 after 10, and I usually try and get out to that one every year if I can. We have a report here about. From our friends in Alderville, Ontario, about veterans being honored in at the Alderville First Nations Remembrance Service. This report comes to us from Dan Jones in Cobourg, Ontario, and we'll just go ahead with that.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario. The Alderville First Nation gathered at their cenotaph Sunday to pay respects to their military veterans past and present. The ceremony was one of several over the weekend, Canada-wide, for National Indigenous Veterans Day. World War II veteran Donald Smoke and veteran Morris McKenzie participated in the commemoration.
Oh, this is a wonderful day. We have our own World War II veteran, who is still with us. And, in spite of the weather, decided to come out and do the ceremony at the monument and here at the community center. And it's just a real honor to have him here with us and be able to celebrate this day.
How important is it to continue to honor the veterans of Alderville?
Well, you know, when you look at our history, First Nations have always defended the land pre-Confederation. We've been involved in all of the wars prior to this country being named as Canada, and that was those warriors' actions were passed down through the generations to the place where the wars started, the world wars, the all of the conflicts since then. We've had our men have been enlisted and women in those conflicts, and now in modern day history we still have conflicts. There some are external, some with governments, and the fight goes on, and they've taught us well.
Now, listening to the MC read off the names of those who enlisted, quite an extensive list for one community. I mean, that really shows you and tells you how much Alderville cared about the war effort.
Oh, absolutely. I think that when it comes to veterans or individuals that enlisted in the war, it was a sense of duty. It was, you know, fight for freedom, for their liberties. And that's the, you know, the importance of it was a time when the whole community was emptied from our men. And, you know, the women and children were left behind, you know, it was the honorable thing to do.
Now, as the years go on, and obviously the veterans pass on, how do you keep the teaching of the veterans and their memories, sacrifices, and contributions in the forefront?
Well, we have, in these modern days, we now have more access to internet and research. We have almost like a renaissance about 20, 25 years ago, where our community started to bring back the culture. And bringing back that culture was also recognizing the contributions of our veterans. And also with those cultural teachings and spiritual teachings coming back to the forefront, the importance of our languages, the veterans, the role of our veterans is just one element, but a very important element to pass down through the generations. So they're there.
Now, just talk about the emotion of seeing your father come out today for the ceremony.
Oh, we tried everything we could to get him to stay home because of the weather, because of, you know, his age, and, you know, there's a, you know, there's illnesses in the community. There's all these bugs that are affecting everybody, and we tried to do our best to actually ask him to stay home, but no, he was determined, and it's a proud moment.
Is that how you classify your father, as determined?
Oh, absolutely.
He sets a goal, he gets it done?
Oh, he does. He does. That's there's no changing his mind.
So then growing up with your father as a war hero, a veteran and a hero, some of the stories, the teachings that, maybe not like the battlefield stories, but the overall character stories that he developed, what did he pass to you?
What he passed to me was the principle of hard work. You have to work for what you want. You have to play your role in community. You have to strive to get ahead, to build that future for your children, grandchildren, and I now have great-grandchildren. So hard work is what he taught me.
Now, when we're just talking now, I'm talking about your father, I can see that the pride, the smile. You have an instant smile. I can see the glow in your face when you talk about this person. Talk about who he is and the contribution he made.
Well, I think that it's a long story. And, you know, the fact that he enlisted in the war before he was of age and had to wait until he was a certain age before he could go overseas. You know, he was involved in the cleanup effort in Europe, and also at the same time enlisted in going to Japan to fight in that war over there. And, you know, fortunately, you know, that ended before they set sail. But, you know, the work, the hard work that he carried with him over the years. He spent 30 years working at General Motors, retired after 30 years. He's been on a pension for like 45 years. I mean, how cool is that? But over that time, you know, he's taught my siblings, you know, my brothers especially, you know, hunting, fishing, trapping, gathering, how to live off the land, and they are able to share that with their, you know, children and grandchildren. So he's got quite a record there of his accomplishments with family.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thanks for that. And Remembrance Day is tomorrow. You can find a local ceremony in your area. They'll be held throughout the region, generally starting at about 10:30. I'll be down at Victory Square not taking part, but observing that ceremony. I think it's always been something I've found worthwhile.
I'm just going to add that In Stanley Park they have... It was done after World War One in the 1920s about Japanese... people that were in the Canadian military in World War One. It was in the 1920s, and it survived when the Japanese were internment. We actually did it before the Americans. It was September 1939 we started it.
Talking about the internment.
Japanese internment. But it, and then the that monument in Stanley Park actually is for all three. It's for the Korean involvement with Japanese Canadians and World War II even, and World War One, and they have an alternative thing there tomorrow, just to bring it up in case you might be interested in going there.
It's a
bit south of Lumberman's Arch, and it kind of borders where they have not quite where the aquarium is, but some other foul or whatever. So you just you might choose to go there tomorrow.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Peter. In the news, it looks like the shutdown of the American government is going to be at an end. And it also seems like after 6 weeks of shutdown, the Democrats didn't really get anything for all their trouble. Here in BC, people are up in arms or extremely worried. I'm hoping we can do a story about that in coming weeks, about the recent Cowichan tribes' land claim decision in Richmond. There's endless chatter online, and what seems to be a lot of misinformation, or at least a lot of it's a lot of information. It's hard to tell what's real and what's overreaction and what's underreaction. It's a bit of a messy issue. In Surrey, there continue to be problems with an ongoing wave of extortion attempts directed at the South Asian community. Something else to be watched.
When it comes to the Aboriginal, supposedly in Canada we have two types of law, whether it's indigenous, the terms are that you're indigenous or you're Aboriginal. And in Canadian law, it's two separate things of law. Just to bring, and that may another complication to everything. Four years ago, there was this Native woman at some kind of a workshop thing, and she was saying they were protesting the pipeline here, the Trans Mountain. Mm-hmm. And and at that time, the judge said that you could not bring up the we're on the unoccupied territory of
unceded,
and that could not be brought up in a court of law. Now, there was something about a year ago, I think there was something that was allowed to be brought up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that they really do play all what they can do to deny the rights.
Yeah. Well, the particular issue that's got people really worried, let's call it that, about the decision in Richmond, the Cowichan tribes' settlement there, was that it affects fee simple property. Fee simple property is basically private property rights where you own the land. And, you know, for instance, you know, when people buy a home, they buy the land that the home is on in the home. And that's a fee simple title. And up until now, you know, usually that kind of property title has been excluded from other kinds of settlements and is covered under treaty issues in areas with treaties, such as the prairies. And in this particular situation in Richmond, the specific decision doesn't affect residents' private property fee simple rights, but it did affect the fee simple rights of the municipality of Richmond and the corporate landowners. And there is a bunch of issues around, because one of the issues with that particular decision is that part of the reason it came about and why it affected it in the ways it did was because that land was, it's not just under a claim, but it was actually set aside by the province at one point to be a reserve, First Nations reserve, based on an established history of residency and use. And it was supposed to be set aside as a reserve, and then the land agent of the time, there was some funny business, and then the land got withdrawn and then sold privately, I think actually to the person who was the land agent himself, in a bit of a sketchy deal around 1920s. So it's not quite like most other land claims, because of this particular nature that it's not just... It's not just based on the fact that they once used it, but they were in fact promised to have this land, and then that was sort of withdrawn under dubious circumstances. But nevertheless, you know, the involvement of fee simple property rights really has people worried, because does that mean it will that could be a factor in other land claims? And as I mentioned, you know, the individual residents, their properties aren't included under this current ruling, but only because the proponents of the case, the plaintiffs, the Cowichan tribes, didn't include that in their claim. So there's some ambiguity as to whether in a different situation where the proponent did include that in the claim, then they could be affected, and that's what's got everybody worried.
Oh, yeah. No, but it's interesting when you brought it up that for this one, it was either one of the levels of government or two of them. You were talking about the federal and the municipal.
Well, it was the municipal and then the private property.
Yeah.
Or the corporate property rights, which in this case is because those were the two other types of ownership that had fee simple property rights in this zone that's affected by it. It's a complicated issue, and I don't want to get too deep in it because I think I can easily get in over my head in terms of what I understand about it, because as I said, there's a lot of sort of there's a lot of conflicting information.
We'll leave Ezra Levant to get hysterical over it, which he is probably. I think they are. I don't check the Rebel News as much as I used to, but I know there's a few posts.
I'm really hoping I can get someone on the show in the coming weeks who can talk about this whole issue in a pretty dry and boring way, by which I mean without a lot of the hyperbole you're seeing online, and hopefully can just explain what's going on here and what the implications are, because, like I say, there's a lot of what you see online, and the news stories I've read haven't gone into that much detail, but the people, everyone commenting, with some claiming some degree of expertise, have been pretty all over the map, and it's hard to see what's going on. I mean, and it'd be nice, I'd love to have a greater understanding of what it is, because for better or worse, BC didn't engage in treaty making with First Nations, as happened throughout most of the rest of Canada, particularly Western Canada. And that's a big part of why there's potential problems around this issue here in the province, because things weren't settled way back when. All right. I think just on the timing, we're unfortunately not going to have time to go with the Vision Zero story, but I think Danny will be bringing you that tomorrow, an important issue as part of Tuesday Speak Up. We have a track here from Amy Milan. She is, she's got a burgeoning solo career, but also the lead singer of Toronto band Stars. And this is from a recent album of hers, and this track is called Untethered.
Come. slip away.
This is Bird Note. Mustafa Santiago Ali has been an environmental activist and policymaker for nearly three decades. The work has taught him that people can drive change with art and storytelling, which inspired him to write this poem called "The Birds Been Praying for Us."
They rise before we do, not just early, but wholly. Wings draped in dawn light, they pull songs from the silence like prophets pulling dreams from dust. A cardinal angel's red for beauty, she bleeds purpose into every sky she touches. They tend the garden we forgot, scattering seeds we too busy to see, pollinating prayers we too proud to speak. Their flight is scripture. If we just read the air, a lesson in letting go, and rising anyway, and trusting the wind to catch what's real. And when they sing, baby, that ain't just music, it's medicine, a sound bath for the soul, reminding us even broken things can build nests and birth miracles. I was thinking about birds and how they are nature's messengers. They do all these amazing things, and they also mirror the health of the planet. And if we remember that interconnectedness, we'll do things differently. I still believe that we will get there one day.
Hear more from Mustafa about art and environmental activism when you listen to Season 7 of Bring Birds Back, available in your favorite podcast app. For Bird Note, I'm Jonies Franklin.
Hello, this is Boris Chassaigne. To get a feel on what's happening across the country, listen to Viewpoints. For reports, interviews, and documentaries on politics, arts and culture, the environment, housing, and more. Thanks to 30 journalists stationed in the Canadian provinces and territories. Local news nationwide. Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM and streaming online at cjsf.ca.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday, you heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
And we'll be heading into our last episode for this season of Gardening with Embark. Of course, we're at the end of the gardening season, so there's a lot less to talk about. But in today's episode, we're going to be talking about what you need to plan for.